Welcome to What the Nostalgia, the podcast where we go back and review movies from our formative years on up to our late teens. At the end of the podcast, we wonder to ourselves, were we looking at the content through rose-colored lens, or is it as nostalgic as before? We're your host, Jarrell.
And I'm Jamil.
And this is What the Nostalgia. We thank you for listening. Jamil, what do we have today?
We have 1998's Rush Hour. This was released September 18th, 1998, directed by Brett Ratner. For the cast, we have Jackie Chan as Lee, Chris Tucker as Carter, Zee Ma as Council Hall, or Council Han, I'm sorry, Ken Lung as Sang, Tom Wilkinson as Jun Tao, Julia Sue as Sue Young, and Elizabeth Kina as Johnson. So for the box office numbers, they had a budget of $33 million, and they grossed $244 million worldwide. So they definitely made a profit off of this one for sure.
Yeah, this was a blockbuster, man. This was
This was a hit.
Yeah, it definitely was a bona fide hit, man. When's the, how many dozens of times have you seen this?
Man, I can't even count. I can't even count it, really, because growing up, I was a big Chris Tucker fan. I love Friday. So Rush Hour was like in that same like category for me. Like I would watch. It was one summer I watched like Friday and I would watch Rush Hour like every day or every other day for the whole summer.
Okay. Yeah, that's a, all right. That's a, quite a combination.
Right.
Just pairing those two together every day.
Right. I got my, my funny limit from those two films.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, likewise, you know, I watched it a lot, man. I watched this film. I mean, who knows, man? Only God has the numbers on how many times I've seen, you know, I've seen this movie.
That's
I'm
real.
Pretty sure, you know, he probably done hit the tally marks up there, like man, you know, you done check this movie about 2,000 times.
Probably too many.
Yeah, too many times doing this review. I'll say that. I had to watch this movie so many times to get what I wanted to say down.
But, yeah.
But yeah, man. I mean, a young Chris Tucker, man, you know, at the, you know, at the height of his game. This is the top Chris Tucker movie. It's got to be, right? Like, what else could?
I was just about to ask you, do you think this is the film that launched him to the stratosphere? Or what do you think it was? Friday? Do you think it was Money Talk? I mean, it's got to be Rush Hour. Because, I mean, they made a whole franchise out of it, you know?
Yeah, this is definitely, I don't think anything else compares. I mean, I know
people. And not only that, but you got to think too, with him pairing with Jackie Chan, that had to bring in a whole nother like side of audience that he probably didn't have, you know, Jackie Chan fans that might not have known of Chris Tucker, you know, and vice versa. So.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if you went over there to China or something and people's over there, Chris Tucker, you know.
Right.
I don't know if that was a good, I don't know if that was a good Chinese impression, but that's just immediately what I thought, what I heard in my mind. But
it might need some work. I think it need a little work, man. For next time.
Yeah, you might be right. But like we said, man, this is definitely his biggest film, and you know, and I don't know why he hasn't done more films. I don't know why he wasn't a bigger star than what he was. I mean,
yeah.
I know he ran into some troubles and everything, but like, I just felt like his career was cut short. Like, it mm-hmm. could have been, like, what's the last movie that you can think of that Chris Tucker was in?
Probably the last Rush Hour.
Back in 07?
No, actually.
He was in something else.
Silver Linings
Playbook. Yeah, yeah.
But
that's the thing. I don't even remember what he did or what he was doing. I think he was just a black best friend.
I thought he was like a counselor or, I don't know. You might be right.
But hey, maybe he was, but that's what I thought I remember him as, just a black best friend in that movie. Maybe he was.
You might be right. I only seen that film like once, so I can't even really remember. But yeah, you're right though. I mean, because I look at it too, man. Like, you got the Martin Lawrences of the world. And then of course, Chris Tucker. It was like a gap for a little while, I feel like. I could be forgetting somebody, but I'm talking about as far as like stars of that magnitude. I feel like it was a huge gap after Martin and Chris Tucker were done up until Kevin Hart came in, which is fairly recently. So, you know, I'm trying to think of it, if it was any other person that bridged that gap before Kevin Hart. But I mean, that touches on your point. Like, I feel like Chris Tucker could have stretched his career out a little bit longer, and that gap might not have been so, you know, so far out, you know?
Yeah, there's no reason why he couldn't have had, like, the same run that Martin Lawrence had. Like, he could have been in a lot more. He could have been in many more action comedy films.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know why it didn't happen. I mean, but,
well, I do faintly remember, because I believe when he was asked to do another Friday, he was basically saying he didn't want to portray that character again. I feel like he kind of got a little religious at some point, because if you notice, like, even in the Rush Hours, as they progressed, he wasn't really cussing as much, you know. He kind of cut it down a little bit, you know. I think that's what it was, man. I feel like he kind of had a talk with God, man, and he really just straight away from certain films, man. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I believe he was, you know, so-called religious. But, mm-hmm. yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, but
I don't know if that's the reason. I mean, I've still seen him doing, like, stand-up comedies, and he was still kind of saying a little. He kept it clean for the most part, but I still heard him, you know, say a couple of things here and there. So I don't know. I feel like it was deeper than that. I feel like something happened. Like I want to know what went down in Hollywood to where he wasn't doing movies like that. Like, it just felt.
Yeah, well, they do call it Hollyweird as well. But I mean, also on top of that, I mean, as far as like the whole Friday thing, I mean, I'm sure you've heard about Ice Cube, like people complaining that Ice Cube didn't pay him. Now, I don't know if that's true. You know, I don't know how true that rumor is, but that's just something that I've heard. So I don't know if that kind of damaged his relationship with Chris Tucker, and maybe that kind of drew him away.
I mean, that's only one franchise. I mean, he could have did many other things other than Friday.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I was saying, like, maybe that's one of the, you know, one of the pins, like, that started to knock down, you know, how he felt about Hollywood and the people that he was surrounding himself with. Maybe it was like a domino effect.
We're talking 1995, bruh. Like, if he wasn't over by that, he still was doing movies, I'm going to have to debunk that. He was still doing movies up until Silver Linings Playlist. I mean, it was getting scarcer and scarcer, but I doubt he was like holding on, like, to something from 1995. Like, you know what? Ice Cube screwed me back in 95.
You're confusing what I'm saying. I'm not saying that was it. I'm not saying that's what did it. I'm saying maybe that was a part of it. Like, maybe that was the start of it. Because, I mean, when was the second Friday made? Like, 2000, the year 2000? And, I mean, the second Rush Hour was, I don't even remember when that was. The first one was 98, 2001. So, you did that. I mean, it was getting scarce, but I feel like maybe that was just a part of it. I'm not saying that was the only thing that made him say, you know, I'm going to stop, you know, making as many movies, you know. I mean, but he did stick with the Rush Hour, that's for sure. Because even, matter of fact, I think the very last Rush Hour, it took a while for them to get him to actually come through with it, like to want to make it. You know what I'm saying? I think I remember hearing that rumor, you know. So even with that, it's great. I mean, as great as this franchise was, you know, for him to be kind of skeptical on it, hesitant about it, you know, that says something.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, all I'm saying is, you know, I hope, you know, Martin Lawrence is kind of like, I mean, at least for me, as like the height of action comedy, or just you know, some of these comedy films. And I just felt like Chris Tucker, he could have been at that same level if he wanted to, you know.
If he continued on with
more films. But the catalog, his movie catalog is a little lacking.
Yeah, that's for sure.
We can go ahead and get into it, though, man. That's enough on his career. Let's get into the film.
Yeah, let's do it, man. Let's do it. So for me, man, I opening up in this film, the first thing that I noticed and I wanted to hit on, man, was the differences between the two main characters, which is Jackie Chan's character, Lee, and Chris Tucker's character, Carter. You know, it's just like a setup for greatness, man. Like, these two people from two different countries, two different cultures, you know, and coming together to clash, you know, especially at first when they first meet. But, you know, you just notice the difference of, like, Lee. He seems like he's on kind of like a James Bond type of mission, you know, and, you know, it comes to be that he's looking for a guy named Jun Tao, a mysterious guy named Jun Tao. And he's pretty much on the hunt for him. And then, you know, you kind of get to, you know, you get to see Lee and the people that surrounded him. That's where you also meet Council Han at that time and his daughter, Soo Young. And, you know, Lee is kind of telling Soo Young, because they're getting ready to go to America, that America is a nice place. You know, she'll be all right going to school there. And then we get a look at, directly after that, of Carter, you know, who is the complete opposite of who, you know, Lee is, you know. And we get into a scene with Carter, you know, in this opening of this film as well. So, and like I said, he's just completely opposite going from there.
Well, yeah, you know, you always got to have it's the formula that they put together for these buddy cop films. You know, you got to have a straight man, and you got to have a person who's wild and, you know, unorthodox. And that wild man is, you know, Chris Tucker in this. And yeah, they bring him in. He's driving, I guess. He's undercover at this, you know, going for a sale or whatever, but just him driving, you know, driving on the street to this little diner, you know, you kind of hear him screaming and everything, you know, talking about, lady, are you crazy? Something like that. You know, it just made me think to myself, man, this is pretty much how I talk while driving on the road now on a daily basis. Like, that, in that same way, I said, yep. As soon as I saw that scene, I was like, that's pretty realistic. I was like, that's me on a pretty much daily basis now while I'm out driving. But anyhow, So he's on the way to this diner to do a buy of some C4. And I just wanted to talk, like, how, like, who would be doing a sale like that in the front parking lot of a diner? Right. just all out in the open. I mean it's dark outside, but still, like, who would think to themselves, hey, let's go ahead, you know, right out here in the front, like, right, not in the back. Right. I mean, you didn't want to go to the back, you didn't want to go to a back alley. So for my I forget that guy's name who had the C4, but I know
it was Clyde.
Yeah, Clyde. So, you know, he was a dumb criminal, basically, to even agree to do that right out in front. And one thing I noticed about Chris Tucker in this movie, you know, he's lying straight out the gate. He'd be lying a lot, just whoever he talking to. Tell him something. I was in the back the whole time or something. Or I was in the diner.
As he clearly pulls up.
Yeah, like, for you to tell lies like that, where you know you lied hard as hell,
right?
It just obvious. I mean, I just thought that was a funny part of the portion of his character.
Yeah, they definitely set it up from the beginning, because, like, throughout this film, we see him in, like, a lot of these situations where he kind of talks his way into something or out of something, you know, one or the other. You know, he's real good at that. And I guess with that type of job, him being undercover and also, you know, trying to find information out in certain scenes, you know, that definitely helped, you know, helped the cause. So yeah, they set that up from the beginning.
Yeah, definitely. But I do also want to say that Chris Tucker, he steps onto the scene and you can tell he's a movie star. He shows up as a star in this movie. So, you know, he completely, like I said, I feel like he reached his final form, you know, from Friday to, you know, to, I don't know, Money Talks, you know, he arrived. I mean, it was like a Will Smith moment, kind of, when he, you know, shows up in the film.
He stole the show, that's for sure. I mean, between his acting and his comedy. I mean, I was gonna say this for later, but I think it's better to say it now. I mean, they say, like, most of his lines, he pretty much just freestyled. Like, he didn't even really, he went off script a lot. They say he just kind of did his own thing, you know, with the dialogue throughout this film. So that shows you right there, man. Everybody can't do that. You know, that takes some talent to really go off script and just make it your own, you know, for it to be so funny that the director says, you know, we're going to keep that. You know, that says a lot.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's why they get some of these guys like that, because they know that these people are going to help the script just within themselves. They know that they're going to ad-lib in a certain way that is going to make the movie funnier. So, yeah, some people do just have that natural gift to just go, right, on, you know. And you see that with a couple of different actors, you know, can go off script and make the movie funnier than what it was, you know, because some of those lines probably were weak, you know. I'm sure, yeah. If I went back, I'm pretty sure I can see the scenes that he ad-libbed himself.
Yeah, probably could tell, that's for sure. Yeah, so they, you know, we talk about these two characters, man, you know, coming from different places. And, you know, not long after we finally have the big meetup between the two, but before they meet up, Carter is assigned the big case. You know, he's assigned what he thinks is the big case. And, you know, the FBI is trying to find somebody to kind of, in a way, what they say, babysit Lee, who, actually, let me go back. We need to mention that.
Gotta go back.
We got to mention that the Council Han, his daughter, Su Young, was kidnapped by the Triads. So, in the beginning of the film, they were trying to take down the Triads, and ended up coming back on them when they ended up going to America on our way to school. Su Young gets kidnapped by the triad. So at that point, you know,
hold on.
The FBI is notified. And oh, go ahead. What you got?
Can I say one thing, man? When I think about, I don't know if you ever think about like great openings to movies, like if you have any that like really come to your come to mind, but
Inglourious Basterds.
Okay, that yeah okay, that's one. And you know, hey, I'm gonna put this one up there, like, just, it's not necessarily the beginning, but I always took it as the beginning of the film. And that being when Su Young is in the car singing that Mariah Carey song, like that, way she was looking as she was singing that, I don't know, that just always was a top opening to a movie to me.
I think it's something that stands out. You know what I'm saying? It's something that kind of it leaves an impression on you. You know what I'm saying? After you watch the film, that's one scene that you know you're gonna remember. You know what I'm saying? Especially with it being placed like towards the beginning of the film. You know, that was just, I feel what you, it's something about that scene. I feel what you're saying on that.
I mean, you know, it's an old comedy trick of somebody singing a song who you wouldn't expect to be singing that song. But still, it worked. It still worked for me when I saw her. You know, she was getting down in the car, and you know, the two drivers are kind of like, you know, kind of looking at each other like, what's going on?
Right.
Yeah, that just always was a top opening to a movie for me.
Yeah, I can agree on that. I can definitely agree on that. Yeah, man. So yeah, all that's going on, man, in that scene, and she ends up getting kidnapped by the triad. So the FBI is notified. And Counsel Han wants Lee to be involved in the searching for his daughter. So, but the thing about it is the FBI doesn't want him involved. They want to kind of do it on their own. They don't know who this guy is. He's coming from China, you know, so it's kind of like, you know, they don't really know how to feel about it, I guess. And I guess, you know, they work within their own, you know,
oh, they know how to feel about it. They don't want him around whatsoever.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they didn't want him involved at all. So, but you know, he ends up flying to the U.S. And Carter is assigned with this big case. So they're basically pawning this off on Carter. You know. Carter is thinking that he's a part of the FBI now, you know, because the way his captain puts it to him is like, you know, this is going to be big for you. You know, the FBI called. And the thing about it is Carter, you can tell Carter has always wanted to be with the FBI, because when he goes to the headquarters or whatever, wherever they were meeting at, one of the first things he says is like, man, y'all sure do take a long time to process an application. You know, so that just tells you right there, he had been wanting to be a part of the FBI. So he's thinking this is a big case, and then they break it down to him of, well, we need you to basically watch Lee, who's coming from China. You know, and of course, Carter, he doesn't want to do it. You know, reluctantly, he goes through with it, I guess, in a way he felt like, maybe he will still have a chance at getting into the FBI if he goes through with it. But yeah, so that was a big thing, man. And they end up meeting up, and that's where you get some of the classic lines from Chris Tucker, you know, classic scenes in my opinion. But you can hit on that, but I just wanted to ask you a quick question, like within that, kind of how, like, do you think the FBI and the LAPD kind of, in real life, do you think it's like that? Because I felt like in this film, they were kind of, the FBI was looking down on the LAPD, like, you know, like, we're the hot shots, you know, we don't want y'all involved at all. Y'all kind of peasants down there doing, you know, handling these petty crimes. You know, I felt like that's kind of how they were, you know, treating the LAPD, you know. And then, of course, Chris Tucker has a line about, he says the Johnson, they're the most hated cops in the free world or something like that. So I was just wondering, man, I wonder if that dynamic really exists in real life, you know?
Yeah, I believe it does. Yeah, I believe you got the, you know, you got the top brass and the FBI, you know, coming around, you know, kind of, you know, pulling up the britches a little bit, like, move aside, boys, you know, throwing the, right, you know, yeah, throwing the shades on a little bit here and there, like, you know, talking about we're on the scene, yeah. You know,
talking about right, right.
You know, let the real police work happen.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like LAPD probably does it too. You know, to whatever is below that. I feel like it's all the food chain that goes down.
Yeah.
I don't know who's over FBI, but, you know, hey, I feel like, I mean, I believe the phrase is the shit rolls downhill. So, mm-hmm. You know, I could picture that. I can picture that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was thinking as I was watching this. But yeah, that's definitely something that I think exists as well, man. I think they really do look down on the LAPD or any other regular cops, you know, as well. But yeah, man, I was gonna also, I got one more question for you, man. Moving forward, you know, we talk about Chris Tucker and his dialogue and his ability to kind of freestyle the lines. Do you think that like some of his jokes would fly like in today's time, how he was joking with Jackie Chan?
I hate answering this question anymore, bro. I really do. It's something that I don't even care. Like whether or not it would fly or not, I really don't care. Like bring the jokes. It is what it is. I mean, yeah, he says certain stuff that it's just not something that I even think about anymore. Like, oh, would that be acceptable? I don't care.
Trust me, I'm with you on that. Like, I think that, hey, it's all fair game. But with the climate today, I mean, it's kind of, I guess I'm the type of person, I think about that, even though I, you know, it doesn't bother me or, you know, like kind of like you said, let the jokes flow. You know what I'm saying? I mean, don't hold back. But it's kind of like, in a way, for me, it's like you kind of got to think about that, like when you see a film, because that's kind of how you separate it in today's time. Like when you, that's how you can appreciate like the Dave Chappelle's of the world, you know, who just freely still says what they want to say, you know, because we know what's not acceptable to say in today's time. So when somebody does say those things, it's kind of refreshing in a way, you know. So I guess that's kind of how I was looking at it when I watched this film. But when I watch anything nowadays, especially stuff from old times, it's kind of like, yeah, would have been an uproar about that, you know, that type of thing.
I mean, I didn't even feel like he said anything too egregious. Like, I mean, I know that people can pick anything, you know, out today, in today's time. But even what he said, I didn't think was like, oh man, yeah, that'd be crazy if he said that today. I mean,
I was actually, I think what kind of sparked that question as well, because I was watching some people review the film. I was watching people, well, it was more of a reaction. Reaction channels doing a reaction to the film, and it was a couple channels that when they got to certain jokes that he was saying, they kind of had a cringe on their face to say, you know, even stuff like, man, you can't say that, you know, stuff like that. And I was just like, man, like, I wouldn't even thought like that, you know, but that's just the way of the world, you know, in today's time. So I think that's kind of what sparked that question, but I'm 100% with you, though. Let it flow. Let the jokes flow.
Who the hell was cringing? like literally, what were they doing? Like, really,
I mean,
scratching their face up? Like, I can't believe
this. I mean, if we was on TV, maybe that would be better for the audiences. I can't really explain it too well. But yeah, just picture somebody with an uncomfortable face as they're reacting to something. That's the best way I could put it.
Go watch Barney or something. I don't know what to tell you.
You said go watch what?
Go watch Barney, I guess. this. But
hey, man, it's the way of the world, man. The way of the world.
I don't even want to hear that question no more. Don't even ask me no more about how do you think the world. Don't ask me, okay? Because I'm gonna go crazy.
Just for that, I'm gonna make sure I put that in there on the next couple of views.
Hey, you know, at your own risk.
I'm gonna go search it out just so I can ask.
At your own risk.
It's gonna be the smallest thing.
All right, that's fine.
But yeah, man. So we'll move forward from that. You know, throughout the film, you know, we kind of see, you know, the relationship between Carter and Lee. You know, they start off rocky for sure. They definitely start off rocky from two different cultures, two different backgrounds, and they kind of got to work together because at the end of the day, they both. Carter wants to solve his case, you know. The FBI doesn't really want him involved. They just want him to babysit Lee. The FBI doesn't want Lee involved. You know, they feel like he'll get in the way. So they both kind of have different goals, but it's common and the same at the same time because Lee wants to save Soo Young and he wants to rescue her and Carter wants to solve the case. You know, so they have to end up working together. So throughout the film, you see, you know, Carter takes Lee around the town. You have the scenes where Lee's trying to escape from Carter. Just a bunch of things happening between the two. But, you know, as most of these films do, you know, the two main characters end up coming together, you know, for that one cause. And,
yeah,
it was definitely one specific scene.
I'm sorry.
No, you got it.
Yeah, let me hit a little bit on that. I mean, again, yeah, they're two different people. I mean, Carter's, as we said, Carter's assignment is to pretty much babysit Lee throughout. You know, early on, Lee does a nice little troll move where he pretends like he can't speak English, which, you know, I feel like there are Asian people out there that do this, that pull a move like that, and you know, pretend like they can't speak it.
Man, that's gotta be convenient, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's gotta be real convenient.
Yeah, definitely. But
it's fun. That's funny though. That's funny. Like when you really think about it, just to have that ability to just so easily get out of something if you really want to, you know?
Yeah, I suppose. So yeah, he pulls that, and then of course we find out that he can't speak English, and he was playing with him a little bit. But I wanted to hit on something, man. When you're dealing with Carter's character, they show it. They let you know that he has a problem with working with teamwork, and he never has a partner, and he's always a solo act. So that's something that he like that they gave his character that he has to work through throughout the film. But my question is,
he says that right to Johnson. He says something about I never want a partner. I don't need a partner. He kind of hits on it himself, right?
Yeah, that's right. But and that you know that gets explored throughout the film, and you come to find out that he didn't want a partner because his father was a police officer as well and got killed because his partner didn't back him up.
Right.
So yeah, we understand why that happens, I guess. But my thing is, again, that was his thing, hill that he had to climb. What was Lee's? Did he have anything? I mean, I understand he had motivation to find that girl, but like did he have anything internally that he had to work through? I didn't see
not that I can think of, man. I mean, nah, I mean it's nothing that I could really think of. He just was really focused on getting Soo Young, but because I mean even in his dialogue, you know, when they go visit Clive in prison, you know, or in jail, he's saying to him, like, I don't care about you. I don't care about him. he was talking about Carter. He's like, all I care about is the girl. You know, he was showing him a picture of Soo Young. So I don't really know, man. I mean, unless you want to count him having to deal with Carter and learn how to deal with Carter as a partner, I don't know.
Nah,
I feel like they both had to kind of, you know, even though, like you said, Carter was the one that didn't want to have a partner at all. But I feel like Lee had to adjust to having him as a partner as well in certain ways, you know.
I guess they just said to themselves, you know what, we'll save Lee's inner motivation for Rush Hour 2 and Rush Hour 3. You know, maybe that's what they did.
Maybe. Yeah. But yeah, man, so we're talking about these two characters coming together. So they ended up hitting the ultimate bonding moment, man. I mean, you know, most of their dialogue starts with comedy. You know, Carter brings the comedy in, you know, into their dialogue and their interactions. So even in their bonding moment, you know, of course, you know, Carter has to kind of make jokes and make fun of Lee. You know, they start singing the famous song War, you know, and Lee's kind of singing it in his own way, I guess, and you know, Carter's trying to tell him how to say what was it, y'all. He was trying to instruct him how to say y'all the correct way, and also teaching him how to dance, which we have to mention. Chris Tucker throughout this film was hitting the Michael Jackson moves and all that good stuff. So if you haven't seen this film, which I'm pretty sure you have, you know, Chris Tucker was a big Michael Jackson fan, and throughout the film, really throughout the whole franchise of these films, he was doing Michael Jackson moves and singing Michael Jackson songs. So, you know, it's something he was teaching Lee in the beginning, or in this first film as well. So, you know, it was a kind of a bonding moment between the two. You know, after that, they pretty much got on the same page, I feel like, you know, from that point on.
Yeah, let's put a pause on that. Did you just call that the ultimate bonding moment? I didn't hear anything you said else after that.
I'm saying, like, in this film, like, wasn't that the bonding moment between them, or was it a different moment?
I'll say it was the bonding moment, but you over there calling it the ultimate bonding moment, as if there was nothing, as if no two characters ever in the history of film have come together greater than when Lee and Carter sang War together. Number one, this scene was dumb. Okay, this was one of the dumber parts to be of the movie. Because, I mean, he's just started singing War, and, you know, this movie, obviously, they're at odds, and you got to come up with something to get these guys together. And, yeah, Jackie Chan is just, I mean, Lee, he's singing the song War, and he's singing it, you know, and I guess in a funny way. And now, Carter is now gonna, this is what sometimes I don't like about some of these movies. Carter's version of showing him his world is, all right, let me show you how to dance. Okay, I guess, like that, like, yeah, Lee, while this song is playing, I guess Lee starts to do some karate move, and now, you know, that's, oh yeah, let me show you my world. And now,
it was bringing the worlds together, man.
I'm sorry.
Like, as we hit on it, think about it. What did we say at the beginning of this review when we started it? You got two different cultures from two different places coming together. So, see, I look at it differently because I think about the character and character development. When you think about Carter's character, from the beginning of the film, he's dancing. I mean, after he busts Clive, he's doing the Michael Jackson moves. Throughout the film, he's doing, you know, he's dancing throughout the film. Lee is doing karate from the beginning of the film. So it's kind of like they bring those two worlds together, and those are the things that they have to show each other. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, even when you carry on throughout this franchise, Chris Tucker, it's not like he was just doing these moves in his first film and that was it for his character. He never did it again. the rest of the franchise, he's hitting these moves and dancing and singing Michael Jackson songs. So I look at it a little different personally.
Yeah, we on two opposite ends of this. Cause I just thought it was a dumb moment where it's like, oh, let me. First off, he went from teaching him how to say war, and then he's like, come on, let me show you. And then he starts dancing. Like, what? Like, why? Okay, I guess. I mean, so that's the two worlds. Oh, let me show you. So, and they, I guess they tried to, yeah, that's the difference between the two worlds. Let me show you. Yeah, I, you know. Watch me dance, you know. I mean, they did it in the, you know, earlier, I guess, the, oh, let's check out the difference between these two. Oh, Lee, he loves the Beach Boys. Oh, and Carter's like, nah, that ain't music. I wasn't really tripping off that scene, but I'm sorry, when the whole dance scene went down, it just was kind of dumb. Like, oh, okay, wow, they really, oh, this is montage time. This is where we bond on. Off of the song War. I ain't like it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they had to bond over the things that we had already seen them do. You know what I'm saying? So to kind of feel like that makes it make more sense to the audience. You know, if they was doing something completely out of their element or something that they haven't done or we didn't see them do, then I would be like, yeah, that's a little, they reaching on that. But I mean, like you said, you mentioned the Beach Boys. You know, some of this stuff was good because, you know, if you dig deeper into the Rush Hours, some of this stuff is callbacks, you know, in the later films. So, you know, that's another thing as well. You know, throughout them learning about each other throughout this film. Yeah.
Well, yeah. In any event, they become best buds now, I guess, through this. And
yeah.
I mean, the thing is, they had Lee teaching him some essential stuff during his montage. You know, like how to take a gun back from somebody, how to disarm somebody, or whatever. And Carter taught him how to, I don't know, what, Cabbage Patch? Yes, I mean, that was just a dumb scene. It was just, it was stupid. Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, that's the worlds that collide, huh? I just taught you how to Cabbage Patch, and you taught me how to disarm a damn bad guy.
Okay. Well, maybe you think what Carter taught him was dumb, because when you think about it, what Lee taught Carter ended up coming in handy later on in the film. You know what I'm saying? So it was actually something tangible that Carter was able to use later in the film.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, Lee was able to, you know, moonwalk his way out of a fight or some shit. But
I'm done.
Just, you know, started doing the worm out of a fight.
Lord. But
it is what it is.
Nah, I feel you, man. You know, we just, you know, agree to disagree on that one, on those things. But that's one of the things, though, with us going back reviewing some of these films, man. I think that, that's a big portion of it. We go back and we realize certain things that we thought were funny then, it doesn't hit the same at our age now. So I can respect that. I can respect your opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, the brother could dance, you know. He had the moves and everything, but you know, I just felt like they could have gave him something more essential to pass on to Lee. But you know, that may be what people deem all that we have to give to another group of people. Let me pass on you this Jay-Z album. Yeah, let me show you how to do the damn. Like I said, what's a '90s move? I can't even think of one right now. Damn butterfly, yeah. That's if we were sending something, if we were sending a damn time capsule or whatever, or something in a capsule up to space for the so-called aliens, it would be a Jay-Z album and a damn video of, I don't know, Sir Mix-a-Lot or something. I don't know.
Oh man, that could be a stand-up comedy bit though.
I guess, but yeah, that's just something that bothered me in the scene. But we can go on.
I feel you, man. Pretty much from that point on, man, they're pretty, and it's kind of interesting because I feel like most films, I could be wrong, but I feel like most films that I see, a lot of the times the people start out as good friends and then they have a falling out and then they end up coming back together. But in this one, it was like,
I'm sorry, I hate to stop you, but in what films does that happen? What type of films are you thinking?
I mean, you kind of put me on the spot there, but I mean, just one off top.
Buddy cop films, I guess, is what I'm saying? Like, or are you just thinking in movies?
I'm just saying in general, because one, I can't think of a lot, but off the top of my head, like Superbad, for example.
That's the first thing that came to my mind. Like,
yeah. It's like they're friends. It's like, it seems like the formula most of the time, I'm not saying this Rush Hour formula doesn't exist, but I'm saying I feel like most of the time the people are already close or, you know, they're friends and then, you know, something happens to kind of draw them apart and then they end up coming back together. But I guess I got to do more research on buddy cop films, but I guess that's probably the best formula for buddy cop movies is for them to not get along at the beginning.
Yeah, I can't think of a single buddy cop movie where the people are already friends. And yeah, I don't think so. I don't know. It may exist and I just don't know, but as far as I can think of, it's always they on two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And have to find a way to come together. Whether that be, you know, the other guys, whether that be, you know, I'll go to animation, you know, whether that be Osmosis Jones. That's a buddy cop film.
Never seen that crap.
we'll get to it. We'll get to it soon. Bad Boys. Hold on. Are they friends?
I think they are, right? They're already partners, right?
I think they're already partners, but so that might be one, but they have kind of a contentious relationship though already.
They're like two totally opposite. One's married and one's like a playboy, you know what I'm saying? So it's two different, you know, type of people, you know, coming together.
Yeah. I mean, it's always going to be that, you know, with the buddy cop film though.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess that dynamic is always there. I guess I'm thinking more so outside of the realm of buddy cop films. So you could just disregard that point altogether, really.
Will do.
Oh man, moving forward, you know, they become cool after that, and they're on the same page of trying to, you know, solve this case. And we come to find out, you know, some things, man. You know, in the beginning of this review, we mentioned somebody by the name of Juntao, and it was just a mysterious person that nobody knew. Like, they were searching through the city. You know, Carter was going to some of the people he knew, was trying to find a name. You know, people didn't know his name. They just knew that this person was around. I think he ends up getting his name from Clive, the guy in the beginning that he busted for the C4. They finally get a name, which is Juntao, from him. But we come to find out, man, it's an act of betrayal in this film, man. We got to mention in the beginning, it was, I can't remember exactly who he was. I guess he was like an English ambassador or something like that.
Yeah. Some British, friend of the family or.
Okay. Yeah. I can't remember what exactly his role was, but you know, he definitely, was celebrating with them when they thought they took down the triad. He was there with Council Han, and like you said, friends with them. And we come to find out that I think his they knew him as Thomas, I believe. He was Jun Tao the whole time, you know, so, which was kind of confusing to me because I think when I first was watching this film back in the day, mm-hmm. I thought Jun Tao was the dude with the short hair, the Asian dude with the short hair. I don't know why, but I was thinking he was Jun Tao. But,
no, you're not the only one in that. Let me get into that real quick. Like, do you remember back in the day that game Zelda?
Yeah.
And you remember how everybody thought that the main character was Zelda, but it was actually Link mm-hmm. or whatever. That's the same way I thought with this character, with these two characters. Like the whole time,
you thought it was that dude too.
Yeah, I believe his name is Sang, but the whole time I thought he was Jun Tao all these years.
Yeah. right. Yeah, I thought the same thing, man. But I guess that was a way of them kind of throwing the okie doke in there in this film, and also to Council Han and everybody else. Yeah, so we find out he's really Jun Tao, and he pretty much orchestrated this whole thing, you know. And we got to mention, man, that once Carter and Lee find out where Jun Tao is, they get a drop on Jun Tao's location. They basically go in rogue, you know, and they try to take him down themselves. And for me personally, I feel like they didn't really think too much into this plan, because this really happened right after they bonded over the whole war and Tootsie Rolling and karate moves. That's right after that, they end up going into the restaurant to try to bust Jun Tao.
By the way, I'm sorry, but that's going to be the description of the episode right there. War, Tootsie Rolls, and whatever other part you said. That's definitely, I'm going back and listening back and to see what you just said. That's going to be the episode description.
I'm with it, man. I'm with it. But but yeah, man, so they go in rogue, man, and they're trying to take down Jun Tao. And they kind of they messed the whole operation up by doing that, because the FBI, they were getting ready to bust them themselves. And when they went in on their own, they kind of messed up the whole operation. Jun Tao gets away at that point, and they end up putting them off the case, which to me, I guess they didn't really, the FBI didn't realize they were doing their own thing at that point. But so they were already pissed off about that, because they didn't want them on the case at all. So when they find out they, you know, were there and kind of messed up the whole sting operation, you know, they end up throwing them off the case, you know. So that was a big part of the film, because like we were speaking about with Lee, he really wanted to find Su Young, you know. And Council Han had him there for that reason. So for him to be thrown off the case, Carter being thrown off the case, we all know that he wanted to be a part of the FBI, you know, and he felt like that was his shot to get in. So they took a sting from that, man. But I mean, like most of these films, man, they find their way back in. Now, I'm trying to think that ending scene where they're all at this last final battle. I'm just wondering how they even really got in like that, because they weren't in disguises. They weren't, you know, now that I think about it, they were just, you know, they got dressed nice and went to this event. So I'm just wondering how they even really got away with even being there, you know what I'm saying, after being thrown off the case.
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of gloss over it a bit. They do just kind of get in there. I don't know, man. I guess that maybe the FBI just had their hands full
maybe,
with making everything go down. But if I can go back just for a second, though, if I'm Council Han, I'm pissed off with them, because like they almost got his daughter killed like twice, you know. Basically,
yeah.
Like they could have just, yeah, like the guy could have. I mean, but at the same time, he was holding her for a pretty big ransom of money. So,
50 million.
You know, it's almost like both of them had ransoms at the same time. Hey, you want that $50 million, you better not touch that girl. Or something like that, you know. So, you know, you kind of got, I mean, he had motivation to keep the girl alive at the same time, you know.
Right.
Because what was he going to do? Yeah. He was going to hold a kidnap and then say, all right, well, I could have got $50 million. I'm just going to kill her, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I was just saying, they really were messing up and could have got his daughter killed. And, but yeah, when all of that goes down, like I said, that's where the, you know, the turn of the character is supposed to happen. And we kind of neglected to mention one character in this film. What's her name? Johnson?
Johnson.
Yeah, I guess she's like the bomb expert or whatever of the LAPD. And yeah, that's convenient. You know, they needed somebody who was going to be able to defuse his bomb that was on, you know, Soo Young's chest. The vest that was on her. And so again, when everything went down, he realizes now that it's about teamwork. And, he needs help and everything. So he calls up, Johnson. And it's all now to save the little girl. And Lee, he's about to go on the plane back to Hong Kong, and Carter, you know, straight out of a comedy bit, you know, has the whole gear on. What are those people called? Air traffic controllers or whatever? I don't know. Is that,
I believe,
the ground crew? I don't know if the ground crew of the air traffic control, I guess. I don't know the airport world. I don't know.
that's probably close enough.
It may be something totally different. Those people may be dealing with the luggage. I don't know what you know. I do my best to describe these people's occupation. You know, if we get corrected, we get corrected on it. But anyhow, yeah, he shows up in this person's uniform and gets the plane to stop, which is very unlikely, I would want to say. But
now this is what we were speaking about in the beginning with his character, man, as far as him being able to talk in and out of situations. You know, this scene was one of the perfect examples of that.
That's true. That is true. He was able to sound so convincing. I mean, just immediately when I'm thinking about the way he was talking to her, it sounded very similar to how he was talking in that restaurant when he was talking to the woman, telling her to go, that he was Juntao's lawyer, telling her, can you tell Juntao to come down here? Tell him some, yeah. You know, tell him, you gonna give me some gas money?
he had a few scenes. I mean, just to kind of go off a little bit, just even when he first got into the FBI, he was picking up files, like, giving orders, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's coming from the LAPD, giving orders to the people in the FBI.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, have we done this yet? Have we done that yet?
He was definitely, like, making himself at home, like he'd been there the whole time, you know?
Right.
That's funny. That's funny.
So, you mentioned Johnson, man, and I think one of the things we got to also mention with her is she had to defuse this bomb for Soo Young, but they showed her, I guess, practicing earlier in the film, and she fails. Like, it was like a, I don't know what it was, but she was trying to defuse a bomb. It was like a test. She was trying to defuse the bomb, and it exploded, basically. So they kind of throw that in there for a little suspense when they actually get to Soo Young and her having to defuse the bomb on her. So, but she ends up doing it. She cuts the right wire. And I can't even begin to, you talk about the airport world, I can't even begin to know how that works in real life. You know what I'm saying? Like, because the way she was acting, it was almost like she was guessing which one to cut. You know, like, she really wasn't sure. So it just made me think, like, in real life, how does that really work? Like, are they making an educated guess? Like, what, you know, because it seems like it is a chance type of thing. So I was sitting there like, man, what? I really wonder, but, you know, we don't have to go too deep into that because I'm pretty sure we wouldn't figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, you know I'm going to go deep into it, though, either way. I mean, I feel like more often than not, you die when it comes to that.
Like in real life?
Yeah, in real life. I feel like, you know, it's nothing like... I feel like in real life, this scene goes, boom, you know,
But in real life, like, what do they train for? Like, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, if you have to practice this, and maybe it was the acting. I don't know. Maybe it was for the suspense of the film. You know, this could be totally a throwout conversation, but, you know, if we're speaking on the film and then we're trying to take something from, you know, a real life situation, you know, it was like she was guessing when she cut the wire. Like, she was kind of giving her a little, you know, you are so beautiful to me, you know, type of, you know, I can't remember that what she was saying, but, you know, almost like we both could probably die right now, but I'm about to cut this wire, you know. So it's like, man, what do they practice for if it comes to that, you know?
Nah, I was kind of joking. I do believe that in real life, I seriously doubt that they would leave a job like that up to chance. Like, you just go in and you got a 33.3% chance of cutting the right one and the other two wires, and you just have to guess. I seriously doubt that's it. I have to believe that they have to study, you know, the colors and where, you know, the combinations and what color is where, and make, you know, I gotta believe it's more than just an educated guess that you put towards doing that, because otherwise it would be exactly what I just said. More often than not, you would die.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it was something I noticed, man.
I might want to look into that. Yeah, you know, you never know if you want to, you know, change job fields and see if you can get into, you know, I might want to check that out.
Nah, probably too old. Well, I mean, you're never too old for anything, but, you know.
Yeah, what was age going to have to do with whether or not I can cut the right wire?
I'm just saying, it'll probably take, I feel like it's the same as if, and don't get me wrong, because I feel like what I'm about to say, it could be taken as, you know, a doubtful type of thing, but I don't mean it in this way. I'm just saying, like, if you're being real about it, it doesn't really matter how old you are to do something, right? Like, if you're 50, 60 years old, you know, and you want to, like, you know, you want to start a music career, you know, whatever, you know, you do that, you know, it's cool, whatever. Do whatever you want to do. But I'm just saying, I'm equating this to, I know we're going off, it seems like we always do this, but I'm equating this to, like, if you're 40-something and you're just going to school to become a doctor, you know, you can still do it. You're not too old to do it, but, I mean, just imagine how much further you could have been if you were in college for this, you know, if you went to college for this as a coming out of high school. You see what I'm saying? That's kind of how I equate this. Like, if you wanted to become a bomb squad, you know, diffuser, you know, or whatever, I feel like it would be the same thing.
Yeah, I see that. But you know how in the Hardball episode where I told you, like, I felt like I could coach a little league team to the championship?
That's different.
That's along the level where I feel like I could do as far as this position. Nah, I feel like
that's completely, we talking about lives here, man. You talking about your life.
Yeah, but I think
it's not just somebody else's life.
Yeah, but I think if push came to shove, I feel like I could step up to the plate. the right wire. Like,
well, you do that. You go for it. You just tell me where it's at so I could be as far away as possible from the scene.
Is that right? Yeah. Which brings me to another scene where Jackie Chan has the bomb, and you know, Carter's like, yeah, go take that over there to Jutao.
Yeah. Because even though she defused it from Su Young, it was still active. Like, it could still blow up, I guess. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, that was a little funny moment there.
I'm sorry. Which is one of the bigger disappointments of the film. That it didn't blow up. Like, you could have gave
us... what did they do? Because didn't he, like, throw it off of the... building, or am I thinking about a completely different movie?
You think about something different. Lee, he's, you know, climbing up that huge whatever that was, going after Juntao, and you know, Juntao is swinging the money. You know, Lee is hanging on like a ledge or whatever, and Juntao is swinging the briefcase of money, which is a dumb move, and he's swinging the money all hard, and all the millions of dollars falls out. Not only does he make the millions of dollars fall out, but he, I guess, tries to save the money, and he winds up kind of falling over the ledge too. And now he's hanging on Lee, and he's holding on to the vest that's on Lee, the bomb vest that's on Lee, and it's beginning to rip.
So
I guess it just rips. And you telling me the way he was holding on to that, y'all didn't both explode? Like, nothing happened. I was expecting to see one final. I was expecting Juntao to get blown up with the same bomb. That would have been poetic justice for him to get blown up with the same bomb that he was trying to kill the little girl with.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean... just to get technical, though, because they had a note as far as this film. They were saying, like, C4, I guess, really isn't that easy to blow up. Because they were saying, like, that beginning scene where Krista or Carter shoots Clive's car and blows up the car with the C4 in the trunk.
Yeah.
They said in real life that wouldn't happen. You can't just shoot at C4 and it explodes like that. They said in real life, it was something, I gotta go back and look at it, but they were saying something about that wouldn't happen. So I guess going to that scene, maybe, you know, in real life it wouldn't explode, it, you know, just by him ripping it like that.
I guess not. I mean, I just felt like that vest was put through a lot. I mean, he was fighting all those people in that building while he had the vest, like, holding it and everything.
Yeah,
so, I mean, he was swinging it pretty rough. And for them, you know, the way Johnson was talking about that vest, like, you know, be careful, it could still explode. Like, what do you have to do to make it explode? Like, you gotta slam it? Like, he did, it seemed like they did enough to make that thing explode. So, you know, I just felt like it was disappointing that the bomb never exploded.
Yeah, I mean, that, you're right, though. It would have been a full circle moment.
Just exploded. I don't even care where you did it. Like, you just would have thrown it in a public bathroom and there was a janitor in there. Like, I wouldn't even care.
Why did you have to add the janitor in the bathroom? Why did you have to put an innocent janitor into this, man?
It is what it is. I just needed an explosion, okay? Because I just figured that there would be a nighttime janitor in the bathroom at that time. And, you know, you kind of out of luck.
Oh, man. But, sorry about that. Yeah. Janitor, man.
Yeah. Sorry, but I'm sorry. Like,
robbed yourself
an explosion.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know.
Come on, the big finale? You don't know. Come on.
They could have did something, but, I mean, you know, they had Jackie Chan's, you know, or I keep saying their real name, Lee's, like, action moves and climbing up the, I don't know what that was exactly, but it was a big display. You know, if you haven't seen
it, we never know the names of any of this stuff.
I don't know what they would call that. I don't know what you would call that. I mean, it was a lot of Chinese artifacts, I mean, in that thing, so I don't know. But that was a part of the building, so I don't think it really had anything to do with the Chinese artifact.
Let me describe it. I would have called it like an indoor water tower. But other than that, I don't. Yeah. Yeah, just the stairs to the building. That's all we need to say.
Yeah, like picture rock climbing without rocks and just poles.
We are terrible. We are terrible with describing this stuff. Matter of fact, that was the worst one. Rock climbing.
Yeah, like think about it. Rock climbing. All right.
Okay,
like
I guess.
Go to one of the like indoor rock climbing, but it's no rock, it's just poles.
All right, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it was a lot that happened within that, man. Like you said, Jun Tao falls to his death, you know. You know, Carter saves Lee, you know, from falling to his death as well. Su Young is saved. They saved the day, you know. So without them, you know, the FBI, they wouldn't have solved this case. I mean, you got to think, if they weren't there, what would have happened? Because I don't even remember the FBI doing anything in this scene. I feel like it was just Carter and Lee, you know, really like saving Su Young. I mean, and Johnson as well. I mean, I don't remember. Well, I guess the other two guys got involved too, but they just, one of them got shot, I think, but he lived. It wasn't fatal.
Yeah, they all got dealt with.
They just got taken out early, you know. So if Carter and Lee weren't there, man, it would have went bad, you know. It definitely would have went bad. And the fact that Carter was the one that had to get Johnson involved to disarm the bomb, she wouldn't have even been there without Carter. You know what I'm saying? So it's a lot you got to think about within that scene.
Now, you also could say that maybe none of the danger would have happened if they didn't show up, because wasn't they just going to do the money transaction? Now, you don't know if the person would have just killed the child anyways, but I'm just saying it could have also been the opposite. Like,
yeah,
they just wouldn't have showed up and just and gave the money, and you know, there would have been a lot less destruction in that building. I'll say that.
Yeah, but I guess they helped take down the bad guys, you know, as well, you know, get them out of the way. But yeah, man, so they come out victorious, man. They helped them solve the case. Su Young is back with her father, and you know, we just kind of move forward in the film. Now, because of this, they want to reward both of them, but they want to reward Carter as well. They offer him a spot in the FBI, you know, and like we mentioned earlier in this review, that's one of the things Carter wanted. He wanted to be a part of the FBI. But because of everything that they put him through, because of everything they put Lee through, putting him off the case, you know, kind of treating Carter as a joke from the beginning, he turns down their offer, you know, and he tells them he's LAPD. You know, he's sticking with what he is and what he knows. So that was just, you know, in the scene before they come together. Because I think this pretty much leads into, when you really think about it, into the second film. Because they end this film with them going to China, and, you know, Carter thinking he's going on vacation, you know, to China or Hong Kong or whatever. So
yeah, it does. Yep. They bring you right on over there to Lee's world now. But that's the end, man. All is back well in the world.
Yeah.
You know, the girl is safe, and
I like how they ended it, and like you said, it was smarter than to kind of the way they ended it to lead it into the next film the way they did. So that was definitely a cool move by them. But before we get to the ratings, man, I just want to bring a few facts about the film. you know, to the people. Let's see. So, one fact is Jackie Chan. Well, first we need to mention Jackie Chan and his stunt work, man. Jackie Chan does all the stunts. I mean, he's known for that, man. He definitely knows karate, and I mean, I'm pretty sure he's a black belt. I mean, if it's a level above that, he's that, I'm pretty sure. But I mean, that's one big thing that Jackie Chan is known for. That's what his films have heavily within them. And you know, this might not have been the only time, but they say in this film, man, Jackie Chan was almost killed. There was a scene where he was almost crushed by metal boxes. They said the boxes slammed together a quarter of a second after his head was clear from the boxes. So they say he almost died during this film, and that's real. I mean, that lets you know he does his own stunts, man. So he don't hold back.
Yeah, that's something, man. Yeah, I knew that he was doing that, and yeah, you could see it. Like, yeah, I mean, he definitely looks like he's doing everything that's in the movie. I mean, because he is, well, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure. Not many people, I don't think, could do that, man. Pull off their own stunts in the film. And yeah, I definitely used to hear that he definitely hurt himself quite a few times. I mean, you said that he almost died, but he definitely got hurt within the movie.
Yeah, I think they show some in the bloopers, right? Him hurting himself or hitting something the wrong way.
Yeah,
I think they show some of that stuff in the bloopers.
Yeah.
But did you know, man? Because I know you know a lot about films. Did you know that Rush Hour actually inspired the creation of the site Rotten Tomatoes?
I did not.
Yeah, man. They say, well, for those of you who don't know, Rotten Tomatoes is probably one of the top two or three sites, if not number one, as far as like rating films and stuff like that. So, just for those who might not know, apparently the creator of Rotten Tomatoes was a fan of Jackie Chan, so he originally created the site to kind of rate and talk about Jackie Chan's films. And it eventually grew and blossomed into what it is today. So just by wanting to talk about his favorite actor, it turned into one of the biggest, you know, review sites in today's time. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Out of all films, Rush Hour was the one. You know?
Yeah, you know, that's pretty crazy, the origin stories of some things. Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah. And let's see, man, a couple more. I think we've had another film like this where you have two characters, but you have some people that were, you know, originally scheduled to play the parts. Do you want to guess, or do you want me to just throw out? Because there's a few names that were supposed to play Carter. And it was one other name that was supposed to play Lee, but that was a whole different pairing. So I don't know if you want to give it a shot or you want me to just name.
Let me see. For Carter, I'm gonna go Martin Lawrence.
Yep, he was the original. He was the original.
I mean, that's just the first thing that came to my mind. Although. You know what? I would have loved to have seen that. I'm not gonna lie to you. I would love to have seen Martin Lawrence play that.
But I have to say,
who else?
This, hold on. Before you go, I gotta say this. With Martin Lawrence, this would have threw the film off so badly, in my opinion, because the original casting, they were gonna cast Martin Lawrence as Carter and Chris Farley as Lee. But they said,
wow.
They said around that time, that's when I guess Chris Farley was kind of going down on a downward spiral, and it was kind of right around the time before he passed away. So they kind of steered away from Chris Farley altogether, you know.
I mean, isn't that like a just completely different? Is it about Hong Kong anymore?
If it's that's Chris what I'm Martin? Saying. That would have changed the film dramatically.
No, you know what? I would have loved to have watched the movie with Martin Lawrence and Chris Farley coming from Hong Kong to save the daughter of a Chinese friend that he had. I felt like that. I think that would have still been just as great of a movie with those two as the cast. I like that.
Nah,
I
don't see it. I don't see it.
I like that. I would have loved to have seen those two together.
No,
this is the problem. Never mind. That's the problem. There's no straight man in that. You can't have two buck wild
that's true.
People
that's
together.
True.
So that wouldn't work.
Yeah, I do see. I could definitely see Martin Lawrence though playing Carter. I could have saw that for sure.
I would have seen that. Can I go to the next person?
Yeah, it's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's 5 more that they consider before Chris Tucker.
Man, I'm trying to think, and they're all black, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, they all black.
What's my guy? He's a comedian too. What was he in? What's my Eddie? What's that guy? Eddie something?
Eddie
from I named one of his movies Undercover Brother. Eddie something.
Oh, Eddie Griffin.
Eddie Griffin. Yeah. Is he one?
Nah.
He's not one.
Now some of these you might not get. You probably not gonna get. Especially one I know for sure.
I know Kevin Hart wasn't out during this time, I don't believe.
Nah, not around then.
What's my guy that we did with Drumline? The band director. Orlando
Jones.
Jones. Is he one?
Nah, nope.
I'm trying to think what other brothers. I mean, Will Smith?
He was one.
Okay.
He was one.
All right, I might could have seen that. I know they didn't have Denzel.
Nah, no Denzel on the list.
Are they all kind of comedic people?
Nope.
Oh, so well, some are serious two, like this?
I guess two out of the last two you could say. Well, yeah, two of the last two definitely comedians.
Who else was out during that time?
Just another big star in the 90s, man. He definitely snowed out.
Big star in the 90s. Yeah, it might be slipping me.
I guess I could say 80s and 90s, if you want to throw the 80s in there.
A brother from the 80s and 90s. Oh, hold on. You got to be talking about Eddie Murphy.
Yep. Okay. He was considered. Now, this one, I didn't know he was even really around at this time, but he's a big comedian.
Oh, you wasn't expecting him? I know you're not talking about Chappelle.
Yep, Chappelle.
Chappelle was you ain't know Chappelle was around? He was in Blue Streak I was 99.
That's right.
I think he was in something before that.
The first thing that I knew Dave Chappelle for was like Half Baked, and I feel like that was 2000, 2001 or something like that.
Nah, you remember him in The Nutty Professor?
Oh,
yeah, that's 96, right?
That slipped my that one slipped my mind. Dang.
But I'm sorry, no, that wouldn't have worked. I mean,
not at that time. His humor is different. It's a lot different.
At no time would Dave Chappelle have worked as a buddy cop. I don't see Chappelle as any type of cop.
You think he's like too goofy for that?
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked. You need a certain edge. You need a character with a certain type of edge, man. Which Chris Tucker has, which Will Smith can have, or Martin Lawrence. Yeah. He doesn't have that. I don't know. I mean,
he got like a soft side, like he could be beat up easily or something kinda. At least in his roles, like when you think about
firstly
the roles he played.
What has he starred in that you say to you? I mean, I recognize that he's one of the greatest comedians ever, but as far as movies, Half-Baked is not a top movie. It's not something where I say, oh yeah, he definitely could have played something. Like, what else has he starred in?
I can't think of
anything.
Man, I guess maybe he's just more the stand-up. He's more really known for, even though he's done films. It's just
he belongs in that side role. He's not a buddy cop star. That just wouldn't.
Well, they considered him. Maybe they were thinking that could have been, because that was still early in his career. So maybe they were thinking that would have been his like breakout role. You know, but they just didn't end up going with him.
Is the last one Guy Tori or one of those two?
Nah, it's two more. You're probably not gonna get
probably not.
Wesley Snipes.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And the last one, I don't know about this, but Tupac. They said
Tupac. I mean, how long was that in the making?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I guess it had been, they had started shooting this film, you know, before Tupac passed, you know, if they were considering him. So maybe two years.
Tupac wasn't really
two or three.
Funny.
2 or 3 years maybe.
You need it. Yeah, that wouldn't have worked neither. Not in my opinion. I mean, you need somebody who's got
that would have cut some of the comedy out.
Yeah, he's not a comedian. Wesley Snipes is not funny. I mean, he's a great actor, but yeah, you need it. Yeah, that would have been like two. I mean, I'm picturing Wesley Snipes as Blade in Rush Hour. That's how I'm picturing him playing that role with the same seriousness.
that would have, like, all of these, probably except for Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence, it would have changed the whole aspect of the film, you know, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely.
But just to think, though, they went through all those names before they got to Chris Tucker. That's crazy.
Yeah, that is wild.
So, but yeah, they made the right choice, man. And the last note, which I don't even know how this would have worked, but they were considering Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker for Lethal Weapon 4. So I don't know how that would have worked, because I thought the story, I haven't seen all, I might have seen the first one. I haven't seen any of the other Lethal Weapons after that, so I don't know if they planned on replacing them in the fourth one, because in the fourth one it's still Danny Glover and what's the dude's name?
Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. So I don't know how that was going to work, but they said they were considering them. I guess they did so well, or maybe, I think that might have been before Rush Hour came out, but I think they were originally considering them for Lethal Weapon 4.
Yeah, I never knew that neither.
That's just some of the facts on the films. We're going to try to bring those to y'all, you know, whenever they're available. Some of these movies might not have, you know, as interesting ones available. But yeah, we'll bring those to you guys from time to time. Now, moving on to the rating, I'll give mine, man. I have to give this film 4.8 rewind rating. I wanted to give it a 5, but I have to leave room. Like, this is, because I'm going to make a statement here, and you're probably not going to agree. But to me, especially rewatching this, and it doesn't matter how many times I've seen this film, I think this is the best buddy cop film of all time. I really do. And I mean, some people say like the second one is better than the first one, you know, and I haven't seen the second one in a while, you know, so I can't disagree or agree with that. But
we'll get to them.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to him, but yeah, man, I really do think this is the best buddy cop film of all time. You know, if not that, it's definitely to me the best franchise buddy cop film of all time. I gotta give it 4.8, man. I would give it 5, but like I said, I gotta leave room for like those masterpiece films that we haven't gotten to yet. So that's mine, man. 4.8.
Okay, okay. I had a pretty low rating for this, bro. I was gonna give it a 2. I was gonna give it a 2. I mean, I don't know what happened. I got kind of bored with it a little bit at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just,
man.
I mean, I'll say this though. I'm not giving it though. I'm not giving it that 2. Talking with you about it, you know, I kind of got a little more excited about it. I kind of found it more entertaining as I was talking it through with you in this review. So I'm gonna bump that up to a 4. I'm gonna bump that up to a 4. I won't disagree with it being, yeah, I would have to say, yeah, probably the best buddy cop. You know, Osmosis Jones might, you know, give it a run for his money, but
I doubt it.
I'm kidding, but yeah, I won't disagree with that. So yeah.
It's got the perfect mixture of comedy and action, you know. I mean, and to have an action master like Jackie Chan, I mean, it's a perfect combination.
I'll say this: as far as action comedy, I'll say maybe that's at the top. I don't quite know if I'll give it buddy cop, the top buddy cop spot, but
To be fair, I gotta go off what I've seen, because it is some that I haven't seen that, you know, I'm just going off of the ones that I know, you know what I'm saying? This is definitely the top of the top for me, you know?
Because I thought other guys were pretty funny, man. Like that.
Yeah,
I know it's
no,
a different
it's no
type.
Rush hour, though. It's no Rush Hour.
Yeah, but, you know, it's something about comedy is my top genre. So that always, like, reigns supreme. So if you can make
now
me laugh.
That's a good one. That's a good one, but I just don't think it's touching Rush Hour.
I don't know. Hey, that's fair enough. But, yeah, I'm going with a 4.
Cool, man. So we got a 4.8 and a 4 on Rush Hour, man. That's legit, man. That's legit.
Well, I think that's it for the review. We'd like to thank y'all for tuning in to this week. And we're going to leave you out with our next movie. Next week, we're going horror. 1996, Scream.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Checking it there. 1996, Scream. We're going to leave you with the trailer. Thank y'all again. Peace.
Peace.
Video.
Really? What?
Well, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
Someone is playing a deadly game.
It all began with a scream over 911.
Someone who's seen one too many scary movies. Now, he's taken his love of fear.
Hello?
One step too far.
Do you like scary movies?
What's the point? They're all the same. Some stupid killer stalking some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be going out the front door. It's insulting.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a scary movie. Number one, you can never have sex.
Hey, what's wrong with this name?
Never, ever.
any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
Get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
He didn't make the rules.
The police are always on track. If they watch Palm Night, they save time.
He just kills by them. Don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Don't try to hide.
Everybody's a suspect!
Go! Not scared, are you?
Squeeze.